passed this responsibility onto a fifth president.
U.S. President Joe Biden speaks in the wake of Taliban takeover in Afghanistan. It's Tuesday, August 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, thousands rush Kabul airport Monday. UN Security Council calls for talks to create new Afghan government. Humanitarian needs loom large in Afghanistan. Vaccines from Poland to boost Australia's fight against COVID. And news from space, it's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden has made his first public remarks since the Taliban entered the Afghan capital, Kabul, on Sunday. President Biden defended his decision to completely withdraw troops from the country and says U.S. goals there have been accomplished. We hear more on Mr. Biden's comments from VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
Striking a defiant tone, President Joe Biden said Monday that he stands squarely behind his decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan and that the Afghan government's collapse was quicker than anticipated.
The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision. American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves.
Biden said he was faced with a choice between sticking to a previously negotiated agreement to withdraw U.S. troops this year or sending thousands more service members back into Afghanistan for a third decade of war.
When I came into office, I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban. Under his agreement, U.S. forces would be out of Afghanistan by May 1, 2021. Just a little over 3 months after I took office. U.S. forces had already drawn down during the Trump administration from roughly 15,500 American forces to 2,500 troops in country. And the Taliban was at its strongest militarily since 2001. The choice I had to make as your president was either to follow through on that agreement or be prepared to go back to fighting the Taliban in the middle of the spring fighting season. There would have been no ceasefire after May 1. There was no agreement protecting our forces after May 1. There was no status quo of stability without American casualties after May 1. There was only a cold reality of either following through on the agreement to withdraw our forces or escalating the conflict and sending thousands more American troops back into combat in Afghanistan, lurching into the third decade of conflict.
The U.S. president added, after 20 years, I've learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces. Biden detailed what he says is the way forward in Afghanistan.
Our mission in Afghanistan has taken many missteps, made many missteps over the past two decades. I'm now the fourth American president to preside over war in Afghanistan, two Democrats and two Republicans. I will not pass this responsibility onto a fifth president.
The president said he'd rather take the criticism over the fallout in Afghanistan than leave the decision to another president.
I will not mislead the American people by claiming that just a little more time in Afghanistan will make all the difference. Nor will I shrink from my share of responsibility for where we are today and how we must move forward from here. I am President of the United States of America, and the buck stops with me. I'm deeply saddened by the facts we now face, but I do not regret my decision to end America's war fighting in Afghanistan and maintain a laser focus on our counterterrorism missions there and other parts of the world.
And Biden reiterated the decision to leave Afghanistan is the right one for America. Ira Millman, VOA Asia.
More on Afghanistan in just a moment. For more on our top story, you can follow our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. U.S. military executing Afghan evacuation. Rapid Taliban offensive avoided tactical mistakes made in 1990s. Afghan president unpopular, isolated before slipping into exile. A stunned world reacts to Afghanistan crisis. Japan PM extends COVID emergency as cases surge. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Thousands of Afghans rushed into Kabul's main airport on Monday. Some held on to a military jet as it took off, plunging to their deaths. At least seven people died in the chaos, U.S. officials said. The crowds came while the Taliban enforced their rule over the capital of 5 million people after a lightning advance across the country, taking just over a week to dethrone the country's Western-backed government. There were no reports of fighting, but many residents stayed home. Reuters reporter Libby Hogan has more on what's unfolded in the capital.
The Taliban declared the war in Afghanistan was over on Monday after they took control of the presidential palace in the capital, Kabul. In a video released from the Taliban in an unidentified location, Deputy Leader Mullah Baradar Akhund made their address.
We congratulate the great victory to the whole Afghan nation, especially to the people of Kabul and to our mujahideens. The way we have come through was unexpected, as we have reached the position which was never expected. But with the help of Allah, that He has given us the victory, and there is nothing like this in history of the world, so we should thank Allah.
It has taken the Taliban just over a week to seize control of the country after a lightning sweep that ended in Kabul. Afghan forces, trained for years and equipped by the U.S. at a cost of billions of dollars, faded away. On Sunday, President Ashraf Ghani fled the country, saying he wanted to avoid bloodshed. Hundreds of Afghans flooded Kabul's airport in the dark, desperate to leave on one of the last commercial flights before U.S. forces took over air traffic control. On Monday, U.S. officials said troops fired in the air to prevent hundreds of civilians from running on the tarmac. A Taliban leader told Reuters that the insurgents were regrouping in different provinces and would wait until foreign forces had left the country before creating a new governance structure. The leader, who requested to be anonymous, said Taliban fighters had been, quote, ordered to allow Afghans to resume daily activities and do nothing to scare civilians. Many Afghans fear the Taliban will return to past harsh practices, imposing Sharia or Islamic religious law. During their rule from 1996 to 2001, women could not work, and punishments included stoning and hanging. The Taliban appears to be trying to project a moderate image in statements and to media outlets. A spokesman told the BBC that women will have access to education and work. Meanwhile, US President Joe Biden has faced rising domestic criticism after sticking to his predecessor Donald Trump's plan to end America's longest war, launched two decades ago. The US ferried embassy staff out by helicopters on Sunday, and the US Pentagon authorized another 1,000 troops to help evacuate US citizens and Afghans who worked for them.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. Still ahead on VOA Asia, members of the UN Security Council call for the establishment of a new government in Afghanistan that is inclusive and representative, including with a full, equal, and meaningful participation of women. Happening now in Asia. In Cambodia, the UN-backed Khmer Rouge Supreme Court presided over the appeal of former Khmer Rouge President Khieu Samphin on Monday. The 90-year-old had previously been sentenced to life in prison for genocide and crimes against humanity. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. On Monday, members of the UN Security Council called for an immediate cessation of all hostilities in Afghanistan and the establishment through inclusive negotiations of a new government that is united, inclusive, and representative, including with a full, equal, and meaningful participation of women. They underline that institutional continuity and adherence to Afghanistan's international obligations, as well as the safety and security of all Afghan and international citizens, must be ensured. Reporter Zakaria Safari is based out of Kabul, Afghanistan. He spoke to VOA's International Edition host Steve Miller about how Afghans felt about their overall security on Sunday.
Of course, people are very worried about the situation. Mr. Ghani left Afghanistan and Mr. Amrullah Saleh left Afghanistan before two days ago. And Mr. Sarwar Danish, the second vice president, he left Afghanistan for Turkey. And lots of officials from Afghanistan left. It means that the people of Afghanistan is still alone and nobody cares about it and nobody worries about it. Before 2 hours, I known that the Minister of Defense of Afghanistan left Afghanistan for United States of Europe. Only Mr. Dr. Abdullah, Mr. Karzai, and Engineer Hikmatyar is in Afghanistan. And people look very worried and they are very concerned about their security, about their future, about the 20 years of democracy, art, cinema, photography, shows, filmmaking, social activity, human rights. People are looking very worried and they are very nervous. They do not know what happens tomorrow. Even me as a journalist, I really don't know what happens tomorrow, what I will see, what I will hear. Me and my wife, Zahra Yusufi, she's also a host for a television, and we both are very worried about the situation.
Speaking about worrying about the situation of Afghanistan, how are people reacting to the speed at which the Taliban were able to sweep across the country and enter the capital?
The people in the Afghan youth on Facebook, on the social platforms, they are blaming Ashraf Ghani for what he did. He left his country in a very bad situation, in a very bad days. People are hoping for the meeting tomorrow. Maybe United Nations may have about Afghanistan's future or about Afghanistan's security. People are hoping, at least a journalist and a social activist or the people who are educated in Afghanistan, they are very much hopeful for about the meeting, about tomorrow's United Nations meeting. People are hoping that America comes back and support the people of Afghanistan. And it is very important in this very, very, very tough situation for the people of Afghanistan. And people are hoping for the United Nations help, for the NATO help, for the America help, or for any single country who were helpful before 20 years for Afghanistan.
That was reporter Zakaria Safari speaking with VOA's International Edition host Steve Miller. Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
News from VOA Asia. Malaysian Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin resigned on Monday after months of bitter infighting in his coalition and with public anger growing over a worsening coronavirus outbreak. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged all parties, especially the Taliban, to exercise the utmost restraint to protect lives and to ensure that humanitarian needs can be met. Guterres called on all parties to provide humanitarians with unimpeded access to deliver timely and life-saving services and aid. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva for VOA on the humanitarian needs on the ground in Afghanistan.
United Nations agencies are pledging to remain in Afghanistan as urban areas, especially the capital Kabul, are overflowing with people who have fled Taliban offensives in rural parts of the country. Jens Laerke, spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, says the UN has been in Afghanistan uninterrupted for the last 70 years and is still there. He says the UN is concerned about the safety of its international and national staff and is closely monitoring events to ensure they are protected.
Of course, it is a very volatile, fluid, rapidly changing situation, but we are staying where we are. We have all intentions to stay and deliver for the Afghan people. The deal that we have in Afghanistan is with the Afghan people, with the civilians, and we are there to stay and help them.
The United Nations has 720 staff assigned to Afghanistan. About 300 UN staff members are on the ground in the country. The rest are working remotely because of the COVID-19 pandemic. OCHA coordinates much of the humanitarian assistance that has been provided by 156 UN and non-governmental agencies to 8 million Afghans this year. Laerke says there's been a surge of displacement since May. This coincides with the accelerated withdrawal of U.S. and NATO troops from Afghanistan. Before the exodus began, he says 21,000 displaced people were recorded in Kabul. Now, he says, thousands more people are rushing into the capital. He says most have no place to sleep and the delivery of aid is becoming more difficult. He says missions are being conducted to assess the needs.
As humanitarians, we will engage with anyone, including the Taliban, if it pertains to accessing people in need. And if that is based fully and firmly on the core humanitarian principles of complete neutrality, impartiality, and independence of delivery.
The UN Refugee Agency, one of the agencies working in Afghanistan, has assessed the needs of nearly 400,000 people who have become newly uprooted this year. The agency is providing food, shelter, hygiene, and other aid. The World Food Program reports it is increasing food assistance programs to reach 9 million acutely hungry people through December. The World Health Organization reports violence-induced trauma is a major public health concern. Consequently, it says it is supporting trauma care in 130 facilities. It says it also is supporting blood banks and training health workers on mass casualty management. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi Sunday announced plans to spend more than $1 trillion on building modern infrastructure to boost the economy and said the country will move toward greater use of clean energy to achieve climate goals. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Poland is selling 1 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine to boost Australia's comparatively low COVID-19 inoculation rates. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Australia has bought extra doses of the Pfizer vaccine from the Polish government for an undisclosed amount. The first shipment arrived in Sydney Sunday. Reports have said Poland has been trying to sell on at least 4 million spare doses from its national stockpile. The deal is part of Canberra's international hunt for extra doses to boost its vaccination rollout. With only about a quarter of its population fully inoculated, Australia has lagged behind many other countries. Half of the doses from Poland will go to 20 to 39-year-olds in the worst virus-hit suburbs in Sydney, where Australia's harshest lockdown got even stricter on Monday, with new regulations that limit the movement of millions of people. Many residents in areas with large numbers of Delta variant infections are not allowed to move more than 5 kilometres from their homes, as law enforcement agencies assume some of the most sweeping powers the country has ever seen. Almost 18,000 police officers and 1,800 soldiers are patrolling Sydney's streets to enforce the lockdown. Health authorities in New South Wales Monday reported 478 new COVID-19 cases, a new daily record, and 7 more fatalities. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is urging people to obey the public health orders.
We've been seeing those case numbers rise in Sydney and New South Wales each day, and that is terribly concerning. So together, we've got to get those numbers coming down. And there are two things we can do. I need you to stay at home, and you needed more vaccines from us. More vaccines are on their way. They'll be there this week.
In Victoria, officials Monday extended a lockdown in Melbourne until at least September 2, as Delta variant infections increase. A nighttime curfew will be imposed from 9 p.m. until 5 a.m. Lockdowns are also in place in the Australian Capital Territory, the region surrounding Canberra, and the Northern Territory. Travel into and out of Australia remains heavily restricted. Most foreign nationals were banned from entering in March 2020 to curb the spread of the virus. The policy continues to separate many families. Daniela May, a German-Australian woman, has written a song about not seeing her extended family overseas.
In different time zones we sit, and the uncertainty we bring, we watch our loved ones frame.
About 39,000 coronavirus cases have been reported in Australia since the pandemic began, and 958 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And now something to end on a lighter note. For astronauts aboard the International Space Station, a pizza delivery that's out of this world. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has news from space.
Aboard this Northrop Grumman Cygnus cargo ship rides precious cargo for the crew of the International Space Station. 3,700 kilograms of food that includes, perhaps most importantly, a pizza kit for the 7 astronauts on board. Of course, Cygnus brought other things, like a mounting bracket for solar wings and a slime mold for a French experiment called Blob, but you might sum up Northrop Grumman's 16th NASA supply run in 2 words: pizza delivery. And not a moment too soon, as the ISS crew likely worked up an appetite in Space Olympics. The crew split into 2 teams, Soyuz and Dragon, and competed in zero-gravity games like synchronized floating and gymnastics. No word from NASA if anyone meddled. Looking deeper in space, NASA Mars Rover Perseverance, or Percy for short, definitely did not win a medal for collecting Martian rock samples. Percy rolled according to plan and bored a hole nearly 3 centimeters in diameter, but the sample tube was empty. Scientists at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, say the rock was not robust enough to get a good sample. But like any champion in waiting, Percy and her team will keep trying, in this case, by finding a new dig site. Also from Mars, or rather above it, comes this image snapped by Percy's travel buddy, the Ingenuity helicopter. The team at NASA's JPL kindly included a zoomed-in image that shows the rover near the top of the frame. Scientists say Ingenuity's travel photos make way for a new game they play called Where's Perseverance? Meanwhile, scientists fine-tuned the path of the asteroid Bennu and found the odds of it hitting our home planet are much higher than previously thought. That said, chances are still very low. NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft heads home after collecting rock samples from the asteroid and gathering enough data to better predict its path for the next 200 years. Finally, on the heels of a downright scary climate report from the United Nations, a look at methane gas, which scientists consider a major factor in global warming and far more dangerous than carbon dioxide. Methane is a byproduct of the oil and gas industries, and using an infrared camera that costs almost $120,000, researchers can see the invisible gas leaking from power plants. Around 60% of the world's methane comes from human activities like agriculture, waste management, and fossil fuel production. Methane plumes are even visible from space. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a good day.